This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, welcome to the Create Unknown, the home of Make Something Mean Something. Big news in TCU universe is the announcement of Smiling Friends season 2 is finally upon us. So that's very, very, very exciting. I am Kevin Lieber, and with me as always is Matthew Tabor.
Yeah, and the training video is out. Smiling Friends training video. Did you see that?
There's been a bunch of really great artists kind of lending their talents to making promotional materials for it. And it's been awesome to see. Yeah. Yeah. There's been some pixel art, been some claymation I've seen. Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah. And Sunday night? Is that right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. No, everybody's excited. And we were wondering just a couple of weeks ago, hey, what's going on here?
They really did kind of drop it out of nowhere, but that's how that's how they work. You know, that's really what happened when the first season dropped. It was just sort of there all of a sudden. And now we're back to being here all of a sudden. So yes, very, very exciting. And, hope to get Zach back on the podcast and Michael too.
Yeah, that would be awesome. And I think, Hans worked on this one as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Hans, Brendan, I think they brought in, some new talent for this season that didn't work on the first one, to do some of the art and stuff. So yeah, it'll be great to see sort of where they've taken the series.
Well, I'm going to do good news briefly so we can talk about all the bad in the world. Mm. You need 30 seconds for the good news and then like 3 hours to analyze the terrible things. Happy birthday to Boss Threads. He is, how old are we going to say Boss Threads is? What would be the funniest age for Boss Threads?
I don't know what a funny age is.
I can't decide whether going really young or really old would be the best fit.
Yeah, I was thinking, he's been with us from time immemorial sort of thing.
That's right. That's right. He's like one of those board games where it's like suitable for ages 3 to 203. That's the happy birthday there. It's another one of those success stories of somebody just grinding forever. You know, we talked about NRM doing it and then all of a sudden the break happens. And he's nearing 4,000 subs now. Just put out a video that was 1 out of 10. So that's all continuing to grow. But Lucifer as well, who's been in the Discord for years now. Lucifer hit the 1,000 sub mark. After many years of just doing the grinding, and it's that case of, well, at a certain point, a little momentum starts to build, and then hit 2000 less than a week later. I mean, it's crazy when somebody's put literally 9 or 10 years into something, and then it begins to roll like that. But, that's what happened with Jimmy, Mr. Beast, where he was a zilch on YouTube forever, grinding away, and then it began to build, and now it appears Mr. Beast has a viable channel.
He's okay. He's okay. 10 years
it's sustainable
is actually the benchmark. When I used to be like super into stand-up comedy, that's what I'd always heard, that 10 years is what it takes to get any good at all, if you're ever going to get any good at doing stand-up. That was just sort of.
And what happens if you're in your 15th year of stand-up
and you still suck? I don't know, but I mean, there are varying.
Do you just say, hey, this is a hobby for me and I enjoy it, so I'm going to continue my mediocrity?
It could be, but it could be a case where like you're good for cruise ships and you can get those gigs, right? Oh. Or are you good for some repeat gig in some club someplace and you know, you host the open mic. There are levels, you know, so maybe you find your niche in one of those levels after 15 years, and you don't get a Netflix special, well, but either way, you know.
There is always a role for everybody. We were talking this morning about how sometimes you're the all-star first baseman and sometimes you're the groundskeeper. So both of these have their place. It's more and more good news, you know, and if you've got it, tell us, drop a comment, jump in the Discord, tweet at us, whatever it is, anything, nothing is too small because all of it's good.
It is all good. And what I need to know from you now at this point, now that we've gotten the good news out of the way, is that earlier today that you told me that you've cracked some codes, you've unlocked some areas of your brain that otherwise remained locked due to watching a program called My 600-Pound Life. Now, I don't know, you know, what secrets have been revealed to you, what veils have been lifted, but I'm interested in hearing about it.
There are actually a lot in this show, but I want to explain why I do this and why it matters in general. Okay, so there's really never been a better way to look at real human behavior than reality TV. Okay, and that's such a big umbrella that a lot of things under it are ridiculous and heavily edited and all of that. But like, what was the context in which you mentioned intervention a little while back?
Oh, geez. I don't know, but I have watched a lot of intervention and I mean, those sort of limit case shows like an intervention or like My 600-Pound Life in which you're seeing someone like on an extreme end of a problem. Those limit cases are where you kind of see little problems that other people can get through really snowball and manifest. And, you know, now it's time to figure out how am I going to survive, you know?
Yeah. And even the business shows, whether it's a restaurant business, you know, how popular the Kitchen Nightmares style stuff is, or a show like The Profit, which both of us liked a lot. Those are certainly edited for narrative, highly edited, whatever. But the core things that happen tend to be very real and very useful. Well, there's a genre of like super real reality TV in which shows like Hoarders and My 600-Pound Life fall in, where you're really getting a raw look at something that's very, very complex. I did a video about a year ago on Hoarders because I was watching this show and I realized that it perfectly encompasses the complexity of how much latitude an individual has to live their life. Because what you watch a show like Hoarders and, you know, if this guy wants 17 cars in his driveway, why is that a problem for anybody else? Well, it can become a problem when the next door neighbor has plummeting property values. All of a sudden, this guy living his life has a negative effect on somebody else. And when you get a case of infestation, for example, where somebody has so much garbage that rats, are all over their property, well, those rats don't respect picket fences. So they wind up in everybody else's yard. It's like, okay, where does your freedom to do whatever you want end, and my freedom to be free from it begin? This is muddy as hell, and different places and different types of people have different answers for where they draw that line. So you can watch a show like Hoarders and see people doing this for a lot of different reasons. You can see why they hoard. You know, some of them have severe trauma that's pushing them in this direction, and they can't get out of it. There are others too, where you get collectors where they will have a collection that's completely ruined. They've put it together and then it's not maintained at all. And the whole thing gets ruined. And it's like, well, what's happening here? Because if you really love that stuff, you do this in a different way. Well, something else is happening with that person.
I have a really good example of that exact person, because there's an episode of Hoarders in which a guy collects, I think it was beer cans. I'm almost positive it was beer cans. Okay. And he has thousands of beer cans, just absolutely stacked up everywhere. In the show, as part of helping him organize and go through his collection, they built this floor to ceiling, beautiful shelving system, and then helped him display his collection properly rather than just being in piles. It was just like pallets and piles of cans. That's what his collection was. They created essentially a beer can museum. He was furious. He hated this.
Was he really?
Yeah. 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 His reaction to this blew me away. Cause I, you know, in my mind, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like the nicest thing they could possibly do for this guy is they turn his thing, you know, his life's work, his life's collection into this gorgeous museum. And he can look through all the cans and see them and appreciate them. Hated it. Was furious that they did this to his collection. Yeah. So
this is why these shows are valuable, because that's right. You look at it and say, okay, this is not about what I thought it was about. And you get all different iterations of that over the course of, I don't know how many seasons Hoarders is in, 10, 11, 12, I don't know. So I love watching these shows, and I'll watch the entire thing from episode one, season one, until it's done. I go through the entire thing and think about all of the episodes, and usually there's somebody to talk about with them too. So I really enjoy that, and it does take a lot of time, but the insight that you get from it is tremendous. Absolutely tremendous. I've gotten a great deal of useful information from hyper analyzing Hoarders. Well, the thing after that for me was my 600-pound life. And that one has been even more useful. There is a lot in that show that is directly relevant to many of the themes that we talk about, to the point where I almost don't know where to begin. It matches up with a show like Hoarders, where, you know, again, at the root is something is going on psychologically for the people of this show. So that common thread is there. But it's also all sorts of reasons. Some people have just straight up food addictions, just like alcoholism or anything else. Others turn to food because of trauma or difficulties of, you know, whatever kind. Some just had really destructive habits. And by the time it became obvious how bad it was for them, they were in so deep that they felt hopeless. And it's like, well, at this point, why do I bother? Like, I'm past the point of no return. And some of them are. And I like as twisted as this is to say, you want to see them all work out. But the reality is, just like Intervention or Hoarders or anything else, not all of them are going to, you know, and it's that glimpse into the realistic outcomes is really worthwhile. So step one here is consider watching shows that show real life and really thinking about what's happening with all of the people in that show. So 600 pound life is, I almost really don't know where to start with this. But the first really big thing that hit me, is the misunderstanding of what motivation is. And it resonates with almost all the talk I've seen surrounding YouTube and all of that stuff, writing books for as long as I can remember. Everybody thinks like, I'm not motivated to do this. I don't have, you know, that thing driving me to do it. Okay. So this is a theme throughout 600 pound life as well, is keeping up the motivation for a thing. Sometimes people have an immediate threat to their life if they don't change their lifestyle immediately, right? Others know they're in a bad place, might be a young person who can get back to a really good place, you know, and they want to enjoy the rest of their life and have a fulfilling life. Others have kids and the motivate, or a husband or a wife, and the motivation is, you know, I want to do this for them. Or sometimes, especially in the case of the couples, they're in a position where that person is doubles as a caretaker for them, and they want to relieve the burden that they've placed on the person they're in a relationship with. Now, this makes for good TV. The motivation is something that you can see waffling through anything. And people talk about this with writing as well. It's like, what's a character's motivation? What's his motivation? Okay. The motivation is actually a 2-second thing. That's it. And that's all it should ever, ever be. There's a reason that you want to do something. That is the motivation. Whether it happens, how well it works, how long you're able to do it, that is not motivation. That is 100% discipline. And it's the execution of that discipline. Executing that discipline and whatever regimen is attached to it, whether it's writing a book, whether it's writing a YouTube video, whether it's exercising or eating well, has nothing to do with the motivation. Motivation is what kicks the discipline in action. And then all of a sudden, oh, Boss Threads is in the chat now. Happy birthday to Boss Threads. We gave you a nod at the top of the show. They are distinctly different things. And when you confuse the two, it's bad. Okay. It is the most undermining, sort of destined for difficulty, if not failure, thing that you can do. So they don't make the distinction very well between the motivation to take a course of action and then the discipline to stay on that course of action.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Rory.
And I'm Maul.
And we're the hosts of the new Rory and Maul podcast.
That's right.
I know you're probably listening to a podcast that you actually like right now, and we just interrupted it with an ad.
That's all right. We're here.
And I appreciate if you didn't hit the 15-second skip button.
Listen to our show where we cover topics like music, movies,
yes,
TV shows, which we love to binge watch.
Of course. Just lifestyle stuff.
And give out crazy stories about our day-to-day lives.
Yeah.
Check us out on the new Rory Maul podcast. Listen to wherever you get your podcast and let us know how you're feeling about our show.
And once you're done listening to this podcast that you actually like, maybe you could check us out.
Do you follow automotive news, or do you just like cars and want to see what the heck's going on? Well, then you might like Donut Media's new podcast, The Big Three. Hi, I'm James Pumphrey, and every week, me and my co-host slash two of my top five friends, Nolan Sykes and Joe Weber, unpack the latest and greatest in automotive news and trends on The Big Three. You'll also get a lot of laughs, hot takes, and personal insight on cars from the biggest car guys in automotive media. So, whether you're a hardcore enthusiast or just a person who goes, that's a good looking car, check out The Big Three, available wherever you get your podcasts, or you can watch the full videos at Donut Podcasts on YouTube.
Yeah, no one ever talks about discipline with this. It always is motivational speaker, a motivational book. When you're right, the motivation is just to achieve a goal. Like, that's easy.
There's not much to
there's
it.
There's not a lot there. Yeah, it's just, I want to look better in a bathing suit, you know, whatever it is. But actually having the discipline to look better in a bathing suit, that's the hard part.
Yeah, the discipline element is the question of, well, now what? That comes after motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And that is obviously everything. We decided many years ago to do a podcast. We had motivations to do that, all sorts of them. And they were all real. They were all legitimate. And then we had to figure out how to do a podcast and then how to do it for 200 some episodes. That had nothing to do with motivation. That had everything to do with discipline to execute the thing that motivated us. And this is why it's so important in this particular show. Nobody in the show ever has a problem with a motivation. They want to go back to work. They want to do this for their kids. They want to be able to just go and do all the things that they can't right now because of their physical state. Well, then it gets complex. It gets complex. And they're seldom honest about how their motivation is in a fine, healthy place. And their discipline is anywhere from shaky to non-existent. And I remember reading, I was watching the show. I remember reading it was about 20 years ago, reading a book called Focused for Bowling. And it was about the psychology of bowling. It wasn't a bestseller. I forget the guy's name who wrote it, Dean something. But there's a page in this book where I'm paraphrasing, but he says essentially, people will say to me, I would do anything to, you know, be a pro. And I hear this too, like I would do anything to be Mr. Beast, to be a Vsauce, to have a career doing the thing I love. That's something that's sustainable. And I just want to be an artist, a creator. Okay. Well, you have to ask questions here. So if you would do anything for it, if I told you, I can guarantee this, we will do this, but you're going to have to be away from your family for 12 months. You will not see them or talk to them at all. Kevin, your parents, your siblings, your wife, they're dead to you for a calendar year. You'll see them after that, but 12 months. Would you do that? Yeah. And very few people are going to say yes. Very few people will make that trade. And that's important because then it's all right. Then you won't do anything for this. And that's okay. That's not proof that you're not committed to it, but it's establishing the bounds of how you're willing to go about it. Those bounds are real. So you hear somebody say, you know, I would do anything for my kids. And then the reality is that there are boundaries to their definition of anything. Sometimes it's really destructive. Other times it just, you know, it's sensible, right? But they make a claim, they have a motivation, and then they don't put it in the context of their real life and what's truly important to them and how they live. The other thing that pops up in virtually every episode here is, spoiler alert, the episodes are like an hour and a half long, not because Dr. Now, who's awesome, the name of his book is People Do Not Lie, or I'm sorry, Scales Do Not Lie, People Do. And that sums up, if you've never seen the show, his approach to like, hey, there's one way to do this. And if you do it, you succeed. And if you don't, you don't. He's a no-nonsense guy.
Which I should say happens a lot in the show where, because they have to regularly go back to weigh in to see what progress they're making. Right. So part of going to Dr. Now.
He sets goals.
Yeah, part of going
specific
to
goals, lose this much in a month or 2 months, come back, and this is how you qualify for his weight loss surgery.
Right. You can't just walk in at 600 pounds and get the surgery. You have to go through his program that shows you're committed to you have the discipline on top of the motivation to actually lose this weight. And that includes proving that you will over the course of months. And people come in and they have gained weight sometimes and they'll be shrug their shoulders. I don't know how that happened. And so that's really where the scales don't lie, people do think comes from.
Right. And it's, yeah, there are reasons why it happened. It's there's not a lot to it.
No,
you know, and I am brutally, I try to be brutally honest with myself about this where, you know, I was talking the other week. It's like, I got myself into a bit of a bad place in physical health. I need to shape that up. Well, what is going to do that? And what am I doing that is counterproductive here? And it's really mundane stuff. It's really mundane stuff that adds up. And you can't have kind of poor discipline if you actually truly have this goal. And that's the thing that you see play out in real time in this show is how real the goal is for different people. You know, and some are fantastic and you're rooting for them, and some are very damaged and you feel sad for them. And others have every bit of support you could expect, you could hope for, everything going for them, and they just piss it away. And you're like, well, you know, you don't want to wish ill will on anybody. But like, come on, you were given everything. There's no more that the world can do for you. This is on you. So seeing that range is pretty useful, because the only way you used to be able to get this, and we talked about this a long, long time ago, is reading fiction, watching movies, seeing other stories that are not similar to your life, and seeing how the people in those stories navigate it all. That's incredible to see all those different paths for all the people involved. It takes a long time to even realize what's in a book and often a movie. It's more efficient when you can just watch it very neatly placed in a line for you over like an hour.
Well, and stories are a lot of times, I mean, they're made to be entertaining. They're made to have certain structures. And I mean, the shows that you're talking about are documentaries, really. They're not, it does it a disservice to bucket it as reality TV in the same way something like something else. I don't know. The Real Housewives of Orange County. Don't know. That's like, obviously. Yeah. No, that's- not a documentary. It's just over the top sensationalism, but Hoarders and
it's entertainment.
Yeah. It's meant to be an entertaining show. It's not meant to document a person's journey through dealing with a disorder or some sort of, you know, health liability. Those are very different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the people who film the show, the crew, has a policy not to intervene under any circumstances. And I've only seen them violate that once. Where a car broke down in the middle of like a 6-lane interstate, and they got out of their car that was filming, and helped push it to the side of the road, because that was like true emergency. But people have, you know, they fall and stuff like that. And the crew doesn't fix that situation. They, you know, there will be a 911 call and paramedics will come and address the situation, but the crew is not jumping in here. So they're truly documenting the thing. But the language, and this is the next step here, the language that's used in this show is really important to think about. One of them is the language around weight loss. The term weight loss is my problem. Loss is, this is the rare example. I don't think words matter that much most of the time. But occasionally, they can completely change an attitude towards something. And this is one of those cases. Weight loss. Loss is a euphemism here. Just like, you know, I lost my dog. I lost my grandparent. Whatever. No, you're saying that because you know, it's a little too raw to say what actually happened there. But with weight loss, look, I lose my car keys. I lose the remote in my bedspread. I lose those things. You don't lose weight. You have to take a deliberate series of actions to make that weight go away. You have to change what you eat. You have to change your physical activity if you can, to the extent that you can. A lot of the people in this show have really limited options there, so they have to start small. But you take this tremendous series of steps to make that thing go away. You have to eliminate it. You have to burn it in the case of fat.
It's proactive, not reactive. It's something you do. It's not something that's done to you. You losing your keys is something, well, that you can't find them, but...
this unfortunate set of circumstances has hit me. I have placed my keys where I don't normally place them, and then I forgot where oh, isn't that a chuckle worthy? Like, these are not the same thing. And you don't gain weight the same way, like, we talk about gaining experience. Like, no, there's no mystical shit here, okay? It's not like that. It's the reverse of those same actions. You are gaining weight because your intake is this and your physical activity is that, and there's an imbalance. So you are taking on, through your actions, what turns out to be weight. That's really critical to me. When you admit that it's really about the actions here and how deliberate you have to be. That's really one of the problems with the billions of people who I've talked to in different capacities over the years, who seem to think that they can just kind of like will a creative career into happening. It's like if they want it for the right reasons, it's going to eventually just happen.
Manifestation.
Manifest. Yes.
The whole manifest.
That's a big thing now, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to manifest it.
Kevin, would you say that you manifested your career, or is it more like, I don't know, being dead tired after frying chicken wings and sitting in front of Premiere until your eyes bleed?
Yeah, well, I think I was having this conversation with somebody recently where it was like, oh, how did you get to your start? It's like, well, I worked two jobs 6 days a week so that I could afford the apartment I was living in. And then after work every night from those six jobs, I would then go to my other job, which was working on my creative stuff. So it was really like, yeah, work all the time so I could afford to work more. That's how I got my start. That's how it worked out.
And eventually you could make a switch, eventually over time, over years of very deliberate actions.
And also earlier when you were talking about like, you know, oh, I'll do anything in order to get this thing. Well, mm-hmm. I've spoken about this before on the podcast, but like one of the things that I received was kind of ridicule and mockery from my coworkers at that time who, you know, just thought I was super weird. I didn't hang out with them. I didn't go to the, you know, the after parties and these shows that they were going to and like this bar or whatever. I would go to work and then I would go home and work on what were really weird, stupid videos and cartoons and stuff on this new thing called YouTube. So yeah, it was weird, but I did receive like derisive comments and kind of, you know, outsider in many ways behavior in my social circles of that time for doing that. So look, that was a thing I was willing to do. I was willing to be the weird guy that everyone was like, what's wrong with Kevin? I was willing to accept that for the glimmer of hope that, you know, I could stop working those jobs and just focus on creative stuff full time. That was a sacrifice.
That's the reality of it. That's the process that kicks in and then sticking to it. And so I want to go back to the notion of discipline, where I don't think very many people have thought about what that means. They've thought about it to like level one, which is like discipline being, here's the set of rules I have or the path that I have to follow. And it encompasses my ability to stay on that path. That's obviously what the word means. And that's not wrong. But there's another level to it as well, where think about the words discipline and disciple. Okay. A disciple is somebody who follows somebody else. Jesus had disciples. Kevin, I'm sure there are Vsauce disciples. Hopefully, when we turn this into a full-fledged cult, this podcast, we will have unknown disciples. But you get this notion of here's a thing that is leading as you or the disciple follows it. Well, what happens in discipline? You are following you. That's baked into that word. The person you're following is yourself and what you have set out for it. And that's a pretty strange realization when you realize that you occupy both of those roles, where you are both the leader and the follower of whatever you're trying to do. And this is the same for exercise, eating, YouTubing, writing, literally anything. There's a component where you are leading and you are following, and that is discipline. It's a distinctly different thing than just, how do I stick to this plan? So yes, when you're following the leader, whether it's somebody else or you, you're sticking to a plan. That's a component here. But when we're talking about discipline on personal action, oh, you have to realize that you are both the leader and the follower. And that means you set the agenda as the leader and you execute the agenda as the disciple. It's a very powerful combination to have.
Well, it's important to contextualize it too, because you can think of it in terms of something like exercise where people have personal trainers, right? Because in that instance, they are a disciple of the personal trainer and they need that connection. They need that mentor to follow, right? And I think that works for a lot of people. Yeah. If you can't afford that, though, because they're expensive, well, guess what? Now you've just done what you're talking about, where you have squashed the, you've become your own personal trainer. you're the trainer and the trainee in one.
Yes. Virtually everybody who listens to this podcast is a serious self-starter. They are a grinder in one way or another, where they want to be. They need to embrace knowing that they're in both roles, because it's awesome too. Once you realize it and understand the relationship between you and you, those two versions of you, everything gets much, much easier. So imagine if you were like a manager managing an employee, but you knew every single one of the employee's thoughts. You knew 100% of what they thought and felt and believed. And imagine being the employee and knowing 100% of your boss's thoughts. I don't have to imagine that, because that's my life. Between the spy cams and the Neuralink, I understand, Kevin. But think about how amazing that would be for both parties. Bit creepy, bit difficult, but, you know, full access to both sides. That's you. That's you when you're both the leader and the disciple. And when you realize that, it's incredibly useful. And it just is so relaxing. It's you just get everything when that happens. Well, the second bit of language is on responsibility. And it's the same concept. It's also built into the word. It's the same component as sponsor. Well, a sponsor would have responsibility for you. They're taking responsibility for you. A responsible sponsor is supporting you and you know, putting you on the right path, or giving you the tools you need, or letting you do your thing, but making it possible by giving you resources, whatever. There are a lot of ways to sponsor. Responsibility is sponsoring yourself. You are both the sponsor and the one who's being sponsored. It's the same relationship as in discipline, where you realize that you're both of these things at the same time. And as you watch a show like 600 Pound Life, you can see where this gets out of whack for everybody on the discipline, on the responsibility, where there's a mismatch. They don't have this in a smooth, you know, direction. It's not flowing, misaligned, however you want to put it. And ultimately, somebody isn't responsible when they're not executing the role of being their own sponsor. It's easy to see when they just blow it off. You're like, oh, okay, they didn't do what they were supposed to do. Yeah, that's one way to not be responsible. But it means they've also failed to be their own sponsor, to get that person inside them to do what they want to do.
Which a lot of people have this problem. And I'm sure everyone listening probably knows someone in their life who will do anything for someone else, will do anything for their kids or their pets,
yep.
Will do anything for them and will do nothing for themselves. So they will like bend over backwards to help out and their kid or their dog or whatever it is, mm-hmm. and then just treat themselves like they don't matter.
That's right.
That is very common. That's exactly what you're talking about.
It is. Yeah. And I know a lot of those people. I'm close to a lot of those people where they will bear any burden for anybody else. It's remarkable what they will endure and take on to help somebody. And that obviously is an incredible trait. At the same time, they will miss very basic elements of taking care of themselves. And well, the result here is that when you don't take care of yourself, then you're less able to help those people. So there's a balance between helping others and putting yourself in a position to really to help them efficiently and happily, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're no good to anybody if your own life is toast.
Yeah, I knew a person once who would cook like insane meals for their dog, like a $20 dinner for the dog. And then they would eat, you know, junk food, candy and cereal. And meanwhile, the dog is eating like they're at a 5-star restaurant and they would just, you know, snack on junk. It's like, this is not right.
Jen says in the chat, you have to treat yourself like somebody you love. That's one of the issues that people in the show deal with, you know, and there's a great psychologist, his name is Matthew Paradise in the show. And he's very good at getting people to realize this. And most of the time you know, there's self-respect missing, and, you know, really caring about somebody, you know, themselves and their own life, usually because they put it into such a bad place, or it's been put in a bad place. I mean, some of the tragedies that these people have endured are shocking. I mean, you wonder how they're even still alive because such horrible stuff has happened to them. But you have to see these stories and start thinking about what's really happening, what the pieces of it really mean. And you get really tough spots that are applicable elsewhere. So, for example, almost all of these shows, you know, there's a supporting actor in the thing where it is that family member, a parent quite often. And that's a weird dynamic because a parent is seeing a child suffer and very well could die before them. This is a horrible thing. But some of them are straight up enablers of the problem. And you see that play out. And it's a very real thing where to what degree are you hard-nosed about this? When you know that you're going to cause pain and make somebody be unhappy if you don't do what they're asking you to do. Well, that situation comes up about 8 times a day in real life in one way or another. That's really something to consider. And you get to see all of these different ways it plays out. And some people have just resigned themselves to it not being a fixable problem. Others cannot bear the thought of hurting that person they love. So they'll continue to do the thing that really hurts them. I mean, this is the complexity of real life. You don't get that in reality TV like Desperate Housewives.
Yeah, in my 600-pound life, it's like getting them a pizza that they're not supposed to have. That's what you're talking about.
Right.
It's like, hey, yeah. I really, really, really want a pizza. You know, it'll be fine. Okay. And they give in and they sneak it in like through the hospital window.
Yeah. Yeah. And seeing the way people talk about those situations when Dr. Now will call them out. So if you get somebody who can't move on their own, like they can't go grocery shopping and make the food, somebody's bringing them all their food, you know, he's like, well, if you're overeating, it's because you have that food in front of you that, you know, your husband brought to you. That's it. Food does not magically appear. Somebody brings it to you. So let's be honest about what happens here. And they will often say something like, well, I just eat whatever people bring me.
Mm.
Think about the language in that sentence. When the reality is you live with one person, his name is Steve. Steve is there all day taking care of you. This is not what people happen to bring you.
It's not the universe.
Sort of like how, yeah. No. It's sort of like the way weight loss is that vague thing. It's not how it works. No, this is about what Steve brings you. And Steve is bringing it to you because you asked for it. Steve went out and bought it. Steve had it in the kitchen and prepared that food for you or ordered it, picked up the delivery or the takeout or got delivery. It's all these deliberate steps that get to this outcome. But there's not a recognition of that in the language they use to talk about it. And when the people start to get specific and honest about the language, it's almost always correlated with them executing what they need to do to improve their health. I don't think I can recall a mismatch where somebody was vague in their mindset, they weren't honest about it, and still succeeded. So that is the to bring it all together moment, is all of these things are really what determine whether it's going to work out.
Yeah.
All of them, literally all of them, right down to the words you use to describe the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you get away from the euphemisms and you get a little bit more real about what's actually happening, well, I could see how there'd be a correlation between facing reality and making a change, or at least interacting with it more directly. I mean, I'm on board with you with these types of shows. I really like them as well. And you mentioned the financial ones like The Prophet, which sadly is no longer running.
Yeah.
Even Shark Tank, I think, has a lot of lessons in it, even as goofy as it is. These are shows that you should be watching to learn more about yourself, your family, other people. I mean, it really is like a life hack in order to learn about human behavior that I think is largely kind of underappreciated for sure.
In a few weeks, you can get what took people a lifetime. the human insight it took them a lifetime to get 50 years ago. Now you can pound it out in like 6 weeks.
Yeah. And
it truly is like that.
You develop empathy. You develop like discernment. You develop like all kinds of stuff. It's not a case of like gawking at weirdos.
No.
It is much more about learning about them, learning about their family, and then how it relates to you and your experience. So definitely recommend doing that. We're out of here for this week. Thanks to all of our patrons in the chat for hanging out with us. It's lovely to see you. Go to patreon.com/thecreateunknown to support this podcast. And until next time, folks, we will see you, Space Cowboys.
Thanks for listening to The Create Unknown. We make this show with the support of our patrons. 100% goes directly to keeping episodes going every week, and we've been shocked by all the new support this year. The World's Ending and I'm Late for Work, Gib Tom, Sid Pope, Demetrius, Atrocious Guff. You guys really do make this show happen. Thank you to the Tots and Dumpster crew, old and new, who save tiny little lives every month. And thank you to our grizzled, battle-hardened child infantry. Jen Mephisanti, Kevin Menard, Mikhail Steinke, Risebread, Sean Malone, Triple Question Mark, Ryan, Kamikaze, Maria, Marco Sheep, Tom Videogre, Jeltsies, and Dan the Latch. And a tremendous shout out to our elite baby gang commanders, Linus and Trevstead, Boromir, Bot Dogs, Chinchilla, Isaac, Conrad, James, Andrew, Jeff Davis, Patrick Pister, Basewaite, Monahim, Dojangles, and Zero. You really are the elite. Thank you as well to our indentured servants, producer-editor Ben Webster, Discord savior Latterman, and producer emeritus Dan Yoshua. And thanks to Basewaite for the use of Created in the Unknown for the opening theme, and to Electro Voice for giving us mics to sound good on top of it. The Create Unknown is an Unknown Media production in partnership with Studio 71.